Seth and Harry Houdini, magician Dennis Watkins, Chicago Community Trust's Daniel Ash, and another round of Picnic with the Heckler's Brad Zabung. And now here's your host, a man who is voting for whoever can fix the TSA, Justin Kaufman.
It's true. Instead of all this haggling in Nevada, all this sort of Hillary Clinton's husband this and Hillary Clinton's husband that, fix the TSA line. And he got my vote. I know politics is pretty complex. It's complicated. But if you fix the TSA line, it's a pretty much direct one-to-one that anybody who travels at all is going to vote for you. So maybe you don't have the ability because you're campaigning Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, but wouldn't you do everything in your power to have that be up on the podium, to be able to say this is wrong, to put some pressures, ask for a meeting, do whatever you can to make sure that we don't have these kind of problems that, frankly, are the kind of problems that make everybody feel like they have no voice. You stand in a line for 3 hours in an airport because you have no voice. And the only way that you're going to get a voice is if you pay the premium.
I feel that, yes, I think that would be a good strategy, but I do feel it's somewhat of a, unless you can give me concrete details about what you're going to do, what your results, right. I feel it rings hollow in that it's almost like a eighth grade election. If you vote for me, I swear you'll never wait in another TSA line again.
You got my vote. Also get some Pepsi up in that machine.
Right.
Well, maybe that's true. Maybe that it, but it'd be nice to see some lip service in that direction. That's all. I just think that that should be the issue of the day. I'm sick and tired of polls and strategies and rhetoric and attack ads and all this kind of things when we have right in front of us an issue that is perplexing.
Yep.
So just fix it. Rahm Emanuel, for all of the bumps and bruises he's had along the way, today says it's unacceptable. Senator Dick Durbin, mm-hmm. out in front saying it's unacceptable. Where's Senator Kirk? I'm sure he's got something to say about it.
Yeah.
But I think all of our Illinois politicians and lawmakers should be involved in trying to fix this mess. And they are. I mean, we're seeing that federal funds are being released. But I just think that'd be the way to go. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio. We've got a great show tonight. Coming up, we're going to talk about Harry Houdini. I'm fascinated by this story, Death in Harry Houdini, a sort of a already successful play that the House Theater has put on over the years. They did it in 2012. They've toured it a little bit. It's back on stage now at the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park. So it's essentially Dennis Watkins is a tremendous third-generation magician here in town. He does the magician parlor at the Palmer House. And he's also an actor, and his idol is Harry Houdini, and he was cast as the actor in this. And this play is about Harry Houdini's life, but it's also throughout the play punctuated by Harry Houdini's stunts. So it's not a play that you go to and you're like, oh, this is fun how the actors kind of, you know, when you go see a great show at Looking Glass, and you're like, they didn't really fly. They kind of used ropes to fly. This is different in the sense that he actually gets in the water torture device, you know, with a straitjacket on and gets himself out while you're watching. Dennis Watkins will be in studio. We'll talk about his love of Harry Houdini and magic. Also tonight, Abraham Levitan is back in studio. This is our man who brought us the Nerds on Tour podcast. We talked to him last month about issues in the music industry for both artists and consumers. So we're going to talk with him about what I'm interested in, Pete. The new Chance Coloring Book record, which is tremendous, as I've heard from reviews, is only available on Apple Music.
Yeah.
As a streaming. You can't go to Apple and download it. It's just for the 2 weeks available, only exclusively for Apple Music. Well, you know what? I don't do Apple Music. I don't do Tidal. I don't even do Spotify.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a straight up gonna go get it from iTunes. So what I don't understand about this new age of music is this territorial exclusive approach to streaming. Mm-hmm. If I am on Spotify, I can't get it because it's on Apple Music. If I'm Apple Music, I can't get Kanye stuff because it's on Tidal. It just seems to be almost flying in the face of musicians being able to distribute their music in this day and age when there is no industry. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk to Abraham about that and some other issues coming up. I think it's interesting. I'm fascinated by how I can't listen to the new music. Also, we'll have Picnic tonight. Very excited. Who do we want to nickname? Nickname tonight for Chicago Cubs. So far, Dexter Fowler is free range.
Yep.
Kyle Hendricks is going tonight. The Calculator's going tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We also, tonight, we're going to have Brags Abung from The Heckler, and we're going to do Hector Rondon.
Great.
And we're going to do Tommy La Stella.
All right.
We need nicknames for Hector Rondon and Tommy La Stella. 312-981-7200. Nicknames for fun and prizes. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's The Carryout, the segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Politicians are all about chiding the TSA for long lines and miserable travel conditions. Mayor Emanuel and Senator Durbin both called it unacceptable and promised federal funding and more agents in the near future. But in the meantime, TSA wants to remind you that it is still your fault. You don't take your shoes off fast enough. And you never take your laptop out of your bag anymore. And you use too many bins. Not to waste a great marketing opportunity, Delta Airlines chose today of all days to announce that they're going to raise ticket prices this summer. That, my friends, is what we call in the industry a dick move. Pretty soon, everything's going to cost a grand. Everything. Not just flying. Everything. Ballparks, video rentals, coffee. Just a straight up grand. You laugh, but the next time you go shopping, check out how much those sunglasses in the windows cost. Guess what? I'll bet you it's a grand. Trouble brewing on the Democrat side of the campaign trail. The Nevada Democrat state convention's getting testy. And traditional Democrats are worried that the Sanders effect on the party could be, quote, revolution. You don't say. Really? It's the first time you're paying attention to this? For Democrats, this is what happens when you anoint a queen before the election takes place. When anything goes awry, and it's going awry, it's only natural for people to think that the election's being stolen. When reached for comment, Hillary Clinton's like, come on, I'm obviously the best candidate. I mean, Bernie doesn't even use email. Bernie versus Hillary, it's not over. I'm not even sure it started yet. Trump and Sanders don't represent American politics. They represent how much we hate it. All right, moving on. A new U.S. government study says that genetically modified crops are safe. Of course, the government also said, we don't need all these TSA agents. I mean, airport security is going to be fine. A new startup in Silicon Valley is applying self-driving technology to rigs. Yep, 18-wheelers, freight traffic. They want self-driving trucks. Well, that's either super great or super scary. I just feel bad for the truckers and their CB conversation. Breaker, 1-9. Anybody out there? Anybody listening? Breaker, 1-9. Breaker, 1-9. This is 2.22.22.4.22.442.0. Does anyone want to play I Spy? Anyone? No. I'm so lonely. That's what a robot trucker sounds like. In weather, nice. Gray, but nice. In sports, the Cubs and the Sox start back up after a day off. Tonight, Kyle the Calculator Hendricks goes against Milwaukee, which is kind of like a home game. And the Sox send Carlos Rodon to the mound at home against the Astros. The Cubs signed former All-Star closer Joe Nathan today. He's recovering from Tommy John. What do I know about Joe Nathan? Well, if you'll indulge me in my fantasy baseball perspective, before the arm injury, he was on the waiver wire. He's kind of a classic load him up and then struggle to get out of a jam closer, you know, for the drama. The Sox are no longer the best team in the AL. Both the Orioles and the Red Sox have creeped up, so now the Sox are just winning the AL Central, not the whole American League, which for 2016 is just so disappointing. So disappointed as a Chicago fan. In NBA news, tonight is the beginning of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Cavs and our Chicago Bulls, because that's how it should have been. It felt right, didn't it? Rolled off the tongue. Nope.
Bulls aren't there. This is what we were promised when we kicked Thibs to the curb. Hoiberg was going to take us to a 7-game series with LeBron. Instead, it's a Canadian expansion team, and the Bulls have a ball in the lottery. Hey, the Oklahoma City Thunder beat the Golden State Warriors last night. Never has there been so much excitement since the Bulls took Game 1 against the Heat a while back. Remember that? Remember how they would always kind of do that and then lose the next four? Right? Remember that? Good. And finally, a man was arrested for running out into the middle of the expressway this morning without his pants. The video clearly shows the man having a hard time with his trousers as they kept falling down. When will streakers learn? Take the pants off before you get into traffic. It's like nobody pays attention to the rules anymore. Well, that's the carryout for May 17, 2016. For your drinks, we kept the end of the straw covered, you know, so you don't think that we drank some of it, which we did.
More to come tonight. Daniel Ash is going to come by, talk about the On the Table dinners that happened last week, presented by the Chicago Community Trust. Also, for sports fans, the Chicago Bulls are going to pick 14. That was very anticlimactic. The Sixers get the number one pick. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Daniel Ash from the Chicago Community Trust. They did the On the Table dinners last week, and they'll synthesize or boil down the results of that conversation. And it's sort of like almost like our annual report for the city of Chicago. what do we care about? So we'll talk with the Community Trust coming up after the news. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well. Great evening.
Yeah.
A couple of primaries. This is fantastic.
You got a couple primaries. You got a lottery, which was totally not interesting. It went exactly in order, didn't it?
Picking 14th.
Yeah.
Bulls. Yeah, what do you know.
I mean, I feel good for the 76ers. I mean, they finally get a number one pick.
But, you know, the 76ers will find some way to screw this up.
I almost wonder if the number one pick is not – it's almost – it has to go with, like, the best talent in the draft, and that usually means the kid. You know, like they're looking at Simmons out of LSU, who played 1 year, and you're like, it's super raw. So it almost goes against the 76ers. They have to pick these kids. I mean, they don't have anybody who's over 21 on that team. It's going to take a couple of years for them to gel.
Speaking of picking kids, I was completely wrong about LeBron James. I thought this guy was going to be an absolute disaster.
Really?
And, well, now we know that he's just fantastic. So, I mean, it's – but
– He's no MJ.
He's close.
My Chicago homerism.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But, you know, he lost. He's not as good as MJ. He hasn't won six times.
No, but he matured well. He's taken on the responsibility. He's certainly a leader out there. But the 76ers, this is a team in disarray, man.
Trade all the guys we can to the Sixers for Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah, but then he's going to get in fights in River North, and it's just going to be ugly, you know?
Yeah, but he could be our new, you know, he could be the sort of...
He's a time bomb.
He could be a Chicago kid. I'll take it.
He's toxic in the locker room. Bob, what do you think about Okafor?
Well, you know what? We'll take it. We'll take it over what we have. I mean, speaking of toxic, yeah, we don't have a toxic locker room right now.
Exactly.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with 11 o'clock tonight. Well, the Chicago Community Trust just finished up their 2016 On the Table events. It's an annual day where 54,000 Chicagoans get together, break bread, and talk about what issues are important to this great town. It's a wonderful experience. I've done it. To get together, talk with others, people you don't necessarily know. People of different backgrounds, but the whole purpose is to talk about what it's like to live here. Then the Community Trust takes all that information, boils it all down, and gives us the finer points. The On the Table events really do serve as almost the city's annual report. Daniel Ash is the Chief Marketing Officer for the Chicago Community Trust, and he joins me now. Daniel, great to see you.
Hey, so good to see you, Justin.
All right, so yeah, I have to say that I missed out this year because of this job. I was invited to one. It was nice. And they're like, yeah, it's going to be at 7 o'clock. I'm like, I'm doing my own on the table. I got my own show to do.
We could have had it on the table right
here. Yeah, we could have done
it. You had plenty of chairs.
Well, that was a big table. Daniel, so talk about this event, because this is now an annual event. It seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger each year.
It is. This year, we, as you noted, we have 54,000 participants all day long on May 10th. Last year, we had 25,000. So we doubled our numbers in 1 year. And I think the reason for that is that people all over the region are hungry to come together and, quite frankly, unify the region. Like, that was our theme this year. Like, how do we unify? You know, you hear day after day after day of issues that we're struggling with, challenges. I mean, quite frankly, this New York Times writing about how crazy Chicago is. And I think people who live here are tired of it, and they wanted to connect. They wanted to listen to one another. And now we're basically seeing and hearing from these individuals that they want to collaborate and work together. And so the trust is committed to work with any civic institution, any corporation, any organization that wants to help, quite frankly, harness the power of
people. Is that pretty much who's sponsoring? Are you getting a lot of sort of buy-in from corporations, from institutions, from people who are like, yeah, we want to be a part of what the trust is doing?
Exactly. We have corporations involved like Allstate, Walgreens. I mean, they had their employees come together and talk about the place that they live, right? In addition to that, we have nonprofits. We had schools. We had churches. So wherever people normally come together, people say, let's stop, let's share a meal, and let's talk about how do we connect the region, how do we unify the region. We commissioned a poll for day of. We didn't do this last year, and we decided we wanted to like sort of get the pulse of the conversation.
Right.
And here's what we heard.
Let me set that up. What'd you hear?
We heard, first of all, that equity and inclusion, like social inclusion, people from all parts of the region feel like the region is sort of disconnected, and there are many, too many, that are sort of left out of the vibrant part of Chicago. People want to solve that. We heard there's a deep desire to collaborate. Education, no surprise. Like, people want to solve that problem. They want to solve the funding problem. They want to solve the public school problem. They want to solve the private school challenges. They just want to make sure our school systems are stronger. We also heard about healthcare. Mental health came out prominently this year. And you've heard Sheriff Dart talk about this, Cook County Sheriff Dart. Mental health issues lead to so many problems.
Right.
And quite frankly, he's on record saying that the Cook County Jail is, quite frankly, the largest mental health provider in the region.
Because people get picked up the police aren't equipped to deal with someone with a mental illness. So they're like, you know what? We know where you can put him, the Cook County Jail.
Exactly. Issues like homelessness, et cetera. So again, it wasn't just like surfacing issues. People were saying, coming up with, quite frankly, being motivated, inspiring one another to like, let's act, let's do things together. So we actually announced a program last week where we're going to offer $1,000 awards to individuals or tables who want to take their conversation to the next level. Now, we know it's not going to be the investment that builds a business. But quite frankly, if we can encourage residents, people who live here, our neighbors, to follow up on their conversation. Someone had an idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you do that? I mean, in the past, has it been just people saying, yeah, I've got this problem and this is what needs to be solved and I'll see you next year? Like, are you finding more? I mean, you're obviously coming up with incentive here, but are you finding more of the 54,000 interested in continuing the conversation?
Well, one thing we've realized that once people get together and they connect and they build relationships, you don't have to do much. They do it on their own. So institutions have completely, like we did, repositioned their strategic direction just because of what they heard. We've heard about residents starting gardens together because they want to beautify a vacant lot. So people have already followed through on the conversations. What we want to do is amplify that, accelerate it. And quite frankly, we want to scale it, right? We want to do big things coming out of this discussion.
Daniel Ash is the Chief Marketing Officer over at the Chicago Community Trust. We're talking about the On the Table events, which happened on May 10th last week. Let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's continue to talk about community, because so often we're told as community, if we want to hear our voices heard, You got to go to the polls. You got to vote. Those are really sort of big sort of ticket items for us. But what you're doing is actually giving voice in between those votes, the ability to actually talk about the problems that are presented that people have to confront on a daily basis, and through the power of community, be able to deal with it. And that's what I want to get at when we come back after the break. Daniel Ash is here. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Goffman. My guest in studio, Chicago Community Trust Chief Marketing Officer Daniel Ash, talking about the On the Table events, which were last week, getting some information about what people were talking about. I mean, the On the Table event brought 54,000 Chicagoans together. Essentially, the idea is all throughout the day on May 10th, people share a meal. 10 people across, in most cases.
Exactly.
And they talk about what's important to them and what it means to live in this region. So, I mean, beyond the poll, the stuff you talked about, which was seems like exclusion, mm-hmm. or more so positive side, like bringing people together, was a top issue. How did it play, like, some of the more the sort of issues that we're talking about as a community, like violence? Did it come up like that, like topical kind of stuff? Is that also show up on your radar?
Well, we know from the anecdotes we've heard from folks who've hosted that safety, violence, the issue did come up. I was at a session at Young Chicago Authors, the group that puts on Louder Than a Bomb. Yeah. It's a youth poetry festival. I happened to be at their open mic night. They had it On the Table. And I have to tell you, like, these are teenagers who live here. And we're talking teenagers from all parts of the city. They're angry. They don't feel safe. They feel challenged. They feel pinched. And quite frankly, their conversation was about expressing that type of anger. And now we're trying to determine, like, well, how do you build a bridge for those young people, right? How do you help them deal with the anger? And quite frankly, how do we as a community embrace them again?
And that's what's great about On the Table is that you can have one, you know, meal where it's 10 teenagers talking. And then there's another that it might be, you know, 10 people over the age of 65. You're getting this sort of mix and this feel for the area that we live in.
Exactly. And that's something that I think as leaders, anyone who considers themselves a leader has to embrace everyday people, what they have to say. And On the Table, at its core, is about creating a safe place where people are comfortable sharing their ideas, sharing how they feel. Mm-hmm. And we know that builds bonds. You mentioned, like, sort of the pathway to creating a more vibrant city. And people tend to jump to voting.
Right. Voting is important. Well, that's all that's offered. I mean, that's really what's offered, that and volunteering.
Important is absolutely critical. But folks who've studied this know that there's a staircase. Right. For most folks, it's not just about voting. It's about participating in your block club. It's about participating in your kid's school or your alma mater. It's about connecting with your next door neighbor. It's about helping your church. All that is civic engagement. And I know that sounds scholarly, right? It sounds jargony, but it's about finding pathways where people start to express their feelings about their community. They are doing things. And again, On the Table is another step in that staircase. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, what we want to do again is to allow folks to come together in sort of bigger coalitions to tackle the toughest issues that we're facing. And public safety, of course, is one of those issues.
Could you imagine? I mean, you've been with the Trust for a couple of years now, and this is an idea that you've sort of been a part of shepherding into Chicago's every year and annual mm-hmm. event. Can you imagine it being this big? When you first started, was that the goal? We're going to get it to 50,000 people. I mean, is the goal next year to double it again and try to get 100,000 Chicagoans involved and On the Table?
Well, my colleagues would, if I said yes to that, my colleagues would probably faint. I have to tell you, we were ambitious, right? And we at the time, people thought we were foolishly ambitious. But we felt that, quite frankly, folks wanted to come together. Our original goal was like 1,000. Then we inched it up to 10,000. We beat that, hit 25. And I actually think we could grow. But I think what's more important is it's not just scale. Like, everybody wants to just get big. It really is about doing things. Like, and if we can demonstrate that we can build coalitions, we can build networks that actually address our toughest issues, then we won't need to put it on the table. On the table will become part of our daily life. And, and what that would mean is people are normally coming together in a very natural way to talk about the tough stuff, celebrate the wonderful things, and then walk away from the table committed to doing more.
And that's the goal. I mean, but that's it almost feels like when you mention church or you mention school or you mention community, that the goal is at the end of the day to find yourself active in that, in what form or another. And you almost have to add on the table to that. For you, I mean, what is success for this program? I mean, and then the second end, how do you get more people involved with this? Mm-hmm. Who's not involved right now?
Well, I would say, let me deal with the second question first, like who's not involved. We want to dig deeper in the community, right? So we recognize that we are already touching folks who have some connection to
maybe they're
civic
already civic
life.
Minded, yeah.
Yeah, they're already civic minded. I think ultimately as a region, and I would say this to the mayor, to any elected official, our governor, you really have to get to everyday people. The folks who are in the bars, the barbershops, the salons, they're in the library just because that's where they get, where the internet access is. The folks who, quite frankly, are struggling, you know, and have a lot of uncertainty in their lives. We want to get to that level because that voice needs to be prominent. I think, again, it's not about slowly on the table doing that, but I think as a community we need to have platforms and space where we get that deep. Now the key is this: when you ask folks to participate, we as a community, and it doesn't matter what industry, what sector, philanthropy, government, corporate, we have to listen and we have to act on what sort of what we hear. It doesn't mean that we yield or we sort of forego our responsibility of making choices. But we should be able to track back every single choice we make to what communities are asking for. That's extremely important because if we break the promise, if we don't follow through on what we're hearing, if folks are saying public safety is important, let's solve that. If we ignore it, then they don't come back to the table. They don't come back to the public square. And then they become disengaged, disconnected, and they won't vote. They won't care. And we see that not only locally, but we see that nationally. We need platforms like this, again, to kind of allow our community to not just heal, but to thrive again.
Daniel Ash is the chief marketing officer for the Chicago Community Trust. They just had the On the Table 2016, which was on May 10th, and we'll look forward to On the Table 2017 and the results of 2016 soon. Daniel, thanks for being here, buddy.
Thank you, Justin.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, we're going to talk with Abraham Levitan, the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast about the music industry. He was on last month, so we have him on. We're going to do the regular segment monthly. And what I want to talk about is this concept, which is called windowing, which is essentially where artists are signing exclusive deals with streaming companies. We see that with Chance the Rapper in his new mixtape, Coloring Book. He signs an exclusive deal with Apple Music, and you can only get it through Apple Music. So Spotify, you're out of luck. Tidal, you're out of luck. Any other streaming situation. But for artists like Chance, does that actually promote illegal downloading in the sense where people are like, well, you know what? I know how to get around this. I'm going to get around it. And that's essentially what a lot of people are seeing. You saw a tremendous amount of illegal pirating of music with Kanye West's latest record because he did the same thing where he said it's only going to be on Tidal. So we'll talk with Abraham about that coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. Also tonight, Picnic. In the 10 o'clock hour, we're giving nicknames to the entire 2016 Chicago Cub team this year. Legitimate, authentic, crowdsourced nicknames. They can't give it to themselves. And we can't rely on the teammates either because it's just so basic. So as last week, we did Kyle Hendricks, and it was the Calculator. So we decided he's a very calculated pitcher. And the week before that, we did Dexter Fowler, where his nickname is Free Range. Tonight, we're doing Hector Rondon, the closer, and Tommy LaStella, the reserve utility infielder, outfielder for the Cubs. 312-981-7200. So we will do that coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. And there are prizes for the people who win. But right now, my guest tonight at the big table is a magician and an actor. So naturally, the role of a lifetime would be that of Harry Houdini. And that's a situation that Dennis Watkins finds himself in again. He's starring in the show Death and Harry Houdini at the House Theater of Chicago. This is the, do you say the sixth, the seventh
the
run?
Seventh production,
the
I
seventh
think.
Production yeah. of this show. It's a tremendous show. It's on stage at the Chopin Theater on Division Street through the 24th of July. Watkins is a working third-generation Chicago magician. He plays regularly at the Magic Parlor at the Palmer House. And that place was made for magic.
That's, sure was.
Dennis Watkins joins me now at the big table. Dennis, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, this is a seventh production. What keeps you coming back?
Oh, it's just so much fun. You know, the show, as an actor, it gives me lots of candy to chew on. There's just tons of great emotional rides and arcs for all the actors in the show. And as a magician, there's so much for me to do. There's magic of every shape and every size, small close-up magic to large-scale illusions to underwater escapes. So,
right.
You know, as a magician and an actor, it sort of gives me all of the fun things to do that I always wanted to do when I was a little kid.
Well, I want to talk to you about that, about how you got into magic, little kid. But let's talk about your relationship to Harry Houdini, because
oh, sure.
you grew up idolizing him. I mean, he is, to magicians, he is the epitome.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that, you know, if you were to stop a 10-year-old on the sidewalk right out here on Michigan Avenue and say, hey, who's the world's greatest magician? Harry Houdini would be the most likely answer. Even though these kids have never seen him do anything, but
right.
his legend is so big and so vast that you think of magic, you think of Harry Houdini.
For you, what attracted you to Harry Houdini?
A lot of things. You know, certainly the... certainly the magic, you know, he spent a lot of time before he got big, before he got famous, working in vaudeville as the king of cards and doing a lot of different kinds of magic, and then grew into something that became his true specialty, which was escapism, which was something that I had never played with as a young magician. I never even thought about doing any kind of escapes until my friend Nathan Allen, who wrote and directed the play, says, hey, I'm working on the show about Harry Houdini. And we started sort of talking about the show. And at some point, the idea of doing the actual water torture cell in the play came up, and that was really the first time I had thought of perhaps doing some kind of escape work. And 15 years later, I'm still getting dunked in that tank of water. But certainly the chance to step into that world and play what I think all of us would consider the person that all of us would think of as history's greatest magician. It's just such a great
now as someone ride. Who has been in magic and has been a magician before this play. I mean, this wasn't your first, you know, you're not an actor who just learned about magic. You had a relationship with Harry Houdini because, as you said, any kid who wants to get into it knows him. But being in a play where you play him, where you learn, you know, you tell his story, I sort of liken it to when a comedian will jump into a you know, certain an idol situation. You know, where
sure.
they're going to play Richard Pryor. They learn so much more about, you know, the character they're playing. For you, was that the same thing? I mean, you knew about Harry Houdini, but after being in this play, especially seven times now, what's your relationship like with Harry?
You know, it's pretty interesting. I feel like. As a magician, I certainly studied Harry Houdini's work as a kid growing up. I remember being in the fifth grade and doing an enormous book report on Harry Houdini, and from that point on being, you know, pretty well obsessed with him. And then getting to approach it as an actor, as a grown-up, made me look at him through a different lens and think about his emotional life and his family life and his personal life and his psychology in ways that, as a magician, I can look at him and study his craft and his tools and his imagination, and then as an actor get to sort of study him as a person and try to wrap my head around his life and the reasons that it went and the directions that it went,
right.
Just from a very human point of view. I think it's been a pretty fun sort of 15-year journey of looking at one person. And of course, in doing it for 15 years, the first time we did the show, I was 20-something years old, and you know, like most 20-somethings, thought I was absolutely invincible. So playing Harry Houdini seemed really fun. And now at 37 years old, revisiting it with a much better, fuller understanding of life and death and my own mortality, playing a character who fights death day in and day out has a very different feel to it.
Does it make you a better magician?
Does being an actor make me a better magician?
Being in this play for 15 years and being a part immersed in Harry Houdini, does it make you, Dennis Watkins, a better magician because you know so much more about Harry Houdini than the average person?
Oh, man, I'm certain that it makes me a better magician. If for no other reason than exactly that, spending a lot of time imagining this man and his life and his mind certainly makes me a better magician. But also, like I said a few minutes ago, the show has so many different kinds of magic. I think that as a magician, it's a pretty wild ride, and it's a pretty challenging ride because you're and of course my friend Nathan sets it in the traverse, so the audience is on all sides of us in this show as well. So that has forced me to build new skills and think of magic in new ways, and certainly makes me better.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how it makes it how you built your skills and how you've evolved as a magician. We're talking with Dennis Watkins here on The Download. He's in the show Death and Harry Houdini at the House Theater of Chicago. He's a third generation Chicago magician. He does shows regularly at the Magic Parlor at the Palmer House. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, more with Dennis and his magic.
Great.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, Dennis Watkins, third generation working Chicago magician. He's the star of the show Death and Harry Houdini, which is back at the House Theater of Chicago. It's on stage at the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park through the 24th of July. You know, Dennis, talk about how you got into magic, because when I keep saying over third generation, third generation, what does that mean?
Well, it means essentially that I was lucky enough to have a granddad who was a wonderful sleight of hand magician and who ran a magic shop in Dallas, Texas for about 30 years selling magicians' equipment and supplies. And it was one of the country's early mail order magic shops. So I got lucky enough to have a granddad who was not only really good at doing magic, but had great resources for a young magician having run the magic shop for so long. So I grew up learning to do magic from him. He was my teacher, and he started teaching me pretty heavily when I was around 7 years old because I just sort of fell in love with what he was doing.
And so what's he start you off with at 7 years old? Because you see, with magic sets, there are a million magic sets you can get even at the Target.
Oh, yeah.
That are like for 7 year olds. And then you're like, you take the stuff out, and I'm not the only parent who's done this. It's like, it just kind of all falls to the floor, and you're like, none of this stuff. He doesn't know what's going to any of this stuff. What were the early kind of tricks that you were sort of getting into at the age of seven?
Well, I guess when I was that young, most of the stuff that I was playing with, most of the kinds of magic tricks would be, you know, appearing scarves and the kinds of things that I think you picture when you close your eyes and imagine a magician who's maybe standing on a stage making a bouquet of flowers appear or stuff that I think to be sort of prop-driven magic. Certainly at the age of seven, not only could my hands not handle any real hard sleight of hand, they were too small to hide a playing card or something. You know, tiny, and my brain couldn't keep up with that stuff either. So as a kid, it was mostly the prop driven stuff. Frankly, a lot of the stuff that my granddad probably sold at the shop were the kinds of things that he started me out with.
What was the discipline like for you? I mean, were you the kind of kid that just kind of dove into it and you were obsessed with it? Did you like just sort of practice the tricks over and over?
Probably a pretty fine line between discipline and obsession when you're like a young boy learning to do magic tricks. And I would certainly say that I lean on the side of being pretty obsessed with it. And I think, you know, as a kid growing up, all my friends were doing, you know, sports and football and whatnot. And I was equally into doing magic as they were into doing the other normal kid things.
Right.
So from the time I was seven through essentially my teenage years all the way through high school, it was a compulsion. I loved it.
Did you recognize, I mean, because it's a hobby at a certain point, right? I mean, obviously
Certainly.
you're obviously part of a family that was their stock and trade. You talked about your grandfather, you know, owning an actual, you know, magician shop. But it is a hobby too. At what point were you like, you know what, this could be my life. This could be my career.
I feel like I at a very young age, wanted to be a professional magician. That's kind of what I wanted to do. My granddad was a magician, and his friends were professional magicians. And I remember that growing up, I got to go every year on Labor Day weekend with my grandfather and my grandmother to the Texas Association of Magicians convention, right, where all the magicians in Texas would get together, and the professional magicians from all over the country would come and perform. And these were folks that were my granddad's peers. And so, strangely enough, I had a perspective as a young kid that being a professional magician was an actual career option,
yeah,
right?
It
seemed like it made sense, right? Yeah. We have conventions. There are lots of them. Look, they're all over the place. So I feel like from a very young age, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And in fact, I remember when I was approaching middle school, I signed up for the theater class mostly because I thought that taking acting lessons would make me a better magician because that's what I wanted to do. And I, in fact, went on to college where I studied acting. I was an acting major at SMU in Dallas and studied theater there. And sort of in that college era, took a little departure where I sort of left the magic behind for a little bit. Luckily, I went to college with Nathan Allen, who wrote and directed Death and Harry Houdini. And he was also sort of a magic geek. So we got to geek out over magic. And when we started to think about what we were going to do after college, he started working on this play and started a theater company, and the magic came right back in.
For you, I mean, you do so much more than just the theater work. Obviously, Death and Harry Houdini is a big part of your last 15 years.
But, absolutely.
But the work at the Magic Parlor, at the Palmer House, you're available for hire for corporate gigs, things like that. At what point have you, I mean, this obviously is what you do. What, talk about the evolution of that. I mean, from the sleight of hand to, I think you mentioned the illusion type stuff that's on stage, to the escape stuff that you're doing in Harry Houdini. That's magic. Those are sort of the three categories of magic. So start off with us, because you did the sleight of hand stuff. That's the stuff that you know, knew best, card tricks, things like that.
Absolutely.
But is that enough to be able to do the kind of stuff that you do for a living?
To a certain degree, yes. You know, there's... magic is a really old art, and there are, I guess, a finite number of tools out there that we know. Not finite. Maybe we can always grow and develop and evolve into something different. But the ideas that exist, you know, you make something disappear. In my show at the Palmer House, I quote a book that says, every miracle you create as a magician will fall into one of the following categories. There are productions, vanishes, transformations, restorations, teleportations, extrasensory perception, the bending of physical laws. Mm. And I kind of think that most magic tricks probably fall into one of those categories. So as a young magician learning to do magic, you start with sleight of hand, and you can accomplish probably something from every one of those categories pure sleight of hand. And then when your audiences grow and you find yourself in a situation where you want to fill a bigger house, you know that, you're still going to make something disappear. You're still going to restore something. You're going to make something teleport. And you just find a different set of tools that allow you to do that on a much bigger scale than you do on a smaller scale. The Magic Parlor is a show where we seat 44 people at a time, and it's mostly close-up parlor-style magic and mind reading. And in that way, it's very different than Death and Harry Houdini, which has people disappearing, people getting cut in half, the water torture cell escape. But Houdini is also a unique show, I think, in that it does feature some close-up sleight-of-hand magic. It's just staged intimately enough that it actually works in the same space where a sawing in half might work.
Well, let's take a break for the news. When we come back, I want to talk about the water torture cell. We also, obviously what we know of magic is from what we get in pop culture. I mean, there's what you're talking about, the old art of magic, vaudeville, other places. Those stories, besides Harry Houdini, are kind of gone to the wayside, been replaced by the Las Vegas magician, the ones that have specials. And they, you know, suspend themselves or do a high-flying act or a tightrope act. Magic has changed in a way that it's almost become even bigger and bolder for bigger audiences on television. So we'll talk a little bit about how pop culture has affected magic throughout the years. Dennis Watkins is my guest tonight. He's a star of the Death and Harry Houdini at the House Theater of Chicago. It's on stage at Chopin through the 24th of July. He also does magic regularly at the Magic Parlor at the Palmer House. More with Dennis when we return here at the Big Table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Dennis Watkins. He's a third-generation magician here in Chicago. He plays regularly at the Magic Parlor at the Palmer House, and he's also the star of Death and Harry Houdini at the House Theater Chicago, which is at the Chopin Theater on Division through the 24th of July, the 7th production of this.
Indeed.
So that leads me to the question about some of the escape stunts.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you have a lot of great stuff in the show, but it's pretty challenging stuff. I mean, obviously, we mentioned right before the break the idea of the water sort of torture box.
Yep.
And you essentially get in the straitjacket, go underwater, upside down, and you have, what, 2 minutes to get yourself out?
The truth of the matter is I have as much time to get out as I have air in my lungs,
right.
which sadly is not terribly long.
Right.
It stretches into most nights that the water torture cell stretches right past the 3 minute mark. It's the water torture cell is a Harry Houdini classic. Harry Houdini invention. It's one of his stage escapes that he performed in his stage shows. It's a vertical chamber of water, and I get lowered into it head first. And the footstocks that my feet are locked into are locked under the tank from the outside, so that all the locks are on the outside. My head is at the bottom of the tank. My feet are sticking outside the top of the tank.
Yeah.
And then we raise a curtain around it and perform the escape the way that Houdini performed it from 1912 until
now. I mean, you know it. You always know something's is dangerous when you have somebody standing by with a sledgehammer.
I suppose that's true. Yeah,
there is one person whose job it is to break the glass if you're not out of there in a certain time.
An unfortunate emergency plan. Because of the way the thing is built, there's not a better plan than that. You just got to break it. At which point, I'm sure we'll have
seven productions. Have you had to break the?
We have not had to break it. Knock on wood. Right. Nothing that dramatic.
You may have jinxed it.
Yeah, I know. Now we're going to have a problem.
When you started the show and you went into the first sort of rehearsals for this and learning this trick and learning this, I mean, did you have to train your body in a certain way? I mean, obviously, 3 minutes to be underwater seems – I'm only thinking about my very casual experience of going underwater when I'm swimming, and it's 30 to 45 seconds.
Yeah, it's not very long. That most people – I think I read recently, and I can't even tell you where it was, that most people can hold their breath for a little under a minute at the most. And then moving beyond that is, frankly, it's just a matter of practice and conditioning and using those muscles and stretching them and keeping them active and really working at it.
I mean, there's a lot of that in this play. I mean, you have to train yourself. I mean, without giving away the tricks. And I mean, you as a performer, I mean, you have to be in shape for this kind of show.
Absolutely. This kind of show is so different from the other shows that I do in that it is a very athletic show. And there's magic of all kinds, stuff that does use, you know, the water torture cell uses almost every muscle in my body. And doing card tricks, you don't really think of as being that strenuous. There's a different kind of stress involved in those things. But this show is extremely physical. There's a walk across a bed of broken glass, which is another thing that you think, well, that is practice, that is discipline, it's just learning to do exactly what you say you're doing, which is walking across the glass 1 foot at a time and having practiced it enough not to slice your feet open.
One of the things about this show and the parlor show is the intimacy. You mentioned in the parlor show, 44 seats. This show, the critics, Chris Jones' piece that just came out, a 4-star review, talked about the intimacy, how close the audience is.
Absolutely.
Talk about that. Do you enjoy that experience, having the audience that close to you?
I love it. I really do. You know, there's magic is a really fun art, and it's an art. We can tell stories with magic in ways that we don't get to tell stories all the time. And that is that we get to look our audience in the eye and actually see it when they're surprised and actually see their wonder and actually share that little moment with them. And when you've got 44 people in the room like the Magic Parlor or in Death and Harry Houdini, about 130 folks, when you got a small room like that and you can actually make eye contact with everybody in the room, I think you get a lot more wonder out of your audience. And there's a real connection there that happens. As opposed to something where you're on a stage with 2,500 people and you're blinded by the lights and you look out there and pretend to be talking directly to somebody, right. but you're not really. These shows are different.
But the frustration, but the more interesting part about this performance for a magician is that, you know, people are fixed on you. They want to catch you. They want to see if they can see where the card went. They want to know if there's some trick to what. So being in that intimate experience, do you see more audiences doing that? Like they're,
I think so. People come to magic shows for different reasons. Some people come to magic shows because they love magic, and some people, and they love to feel magic and feel wonder. And some people come to magic shows because they want to catch the magician because they feel like there's some sort of innate challenge between the magician and the audience. And that's why they opt in for that experience, right? I like to believe that once we get about halfway into one of our magic shows at the House Theater of Chicago, that the idea of wanting to challenge the magician mm-hmm. is gone, and that the idea of wanting to figure it out hopefully is gone. If we're doing our job as storytellers, people will let go of that because they're just having enough fun enjoying the magic.
Well, contemporary magic kind of feeds off of that, doesn't it? I mean, it might actually make your job a little bit tougher because there's so much that goes into, watch what I'm going to do. You're not going to believe what I'm going to do. We're going to have a special on uh-huh. Channel 7. It's going to be huge. And there's no way you're going to figure it out, but you're going to try to figure it out. And I'm going to tell you when this is all done. And no, I'm not going to. Like, it's all almost around the mystique of, like, can you figure out what this trick is? And less about that sort of disbelief or just suspending belief and be like, this is amazing. You know, how what's the relationship like for you as a working magician with the way that magic is presented in pop culture?
That's an interesting question because I think there's a lot of magic in pop culture right now. You can watch America's Got Talent and you've got magicians all over the place.
Yeah, right.
The Illusionist is this giant show that's been touring the world and is really wonderful and has a lot of big magic in it. Penn and Teller have multiple television shows on magic right now. There's magic all over the place in pop culture. And I think it does survive partially because there's a fun in the mystique and a fun in the secrecy of it. But I think that in the long run, over time, it survives because it does just that thing I was talking about earlier, where it sparks people's imaginations.
Right.
And frankly, that's what we all want when we dive into a story, right?
Right.
We go to a movie and we want to believe that that's Captain America, and we want to turn everything off for a little while, and we want to watch Captain America be a superhero. And I think that when we go to a magic show, there's a similar imagination that we want to turn on. And people who come to the magic parlor or people who come to Death and Harry Houdini don't believe that I have any real magic powers, but it might be fun to sit in the theater for 2 hours and imagine that it's possible for a lady to float right in front of you.
You nailed it. And I also wonder if it's a little bit of the same thing that we have with sports stars, where we're like, this is
absolutely
a human being. I identify with this human being. They've done this and they've trained themselves to have the skill to be able to hit this 100-mile-per-hour ball over
right?
the fence. And that makes them extraordinary.
Yeah.
Like, that's things that I could do if I really wanted to, but I can't. So you're doing it as extraordinary. And I feel like with magic, the same kind of thing, where when I see a magician, I'm like, man, that is amazing what you can do. And you're just like me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I love this, the concept that I pulled this quote from one of the interviews that I read about you, that the number one rule of magic is to oppose the willful exposure to the public of any principles of the art of magic. That's the concept, the big thing that I think that the magic community has wrestled over for years, which is about not being able to tell the trick.
Absolutely.
You see that happen more often. People sort of take their shots at that, or they kind of they work around the edges. They're a little bit more creative in how they do it. Penn and Teller are kind of great at this.
Absolutely.
But take your what's your take on that? This is sort of the number one rule of magic.
Right, which is just not to expose it. And, you know, it's interesting because in my life, I get, because I live in the Chicago theater community, I get to work with a lot of actors in different plays where the directors or the writers have said, we want this moment to feel really magical. So I'll come in and I'll teach the actors how to do a magic trick. And we always have a little talk when we start these rehearsals about, like, why don't we actually tell people how it works? And the real reason is that it feels to me like as magicians and storytellers, we get to give people that wonderful little gift of being mm-hmm. surprised and saying, oh my gosh, and how is that possible? And living in that wonder. And then afterwards, when we leave the stage and our friends say, okay, but how did it work? And we tell them, then you just like, you get to, you just take that right back. You give them a lovely little gift and then you take it right back. And that moment is no longer magical at all, not in their memory of it, not when they relive the story. The magic of it is just gone, and right. all they see is deception. And you've robbed them of something at that point, I think. And there's a really, there are a lot of magicians who feel like we don't want people to know our secrets because we have to pay our mortgages. Yeah, right. But also, more than that, it's because it's the only real gift that we get to give, so why take it back?
And it leads me to a simple question, but I think one that's probably more complicated. For magicians, because you're so tactical, because you're so skillful, because you know how this magic takes place, do you as a magician believe in magic?
Do I believe in magic? That's a good question. I think I believe in magic. I think the world is a very magical place. And while I don't believe that there are human beings who can actually read our minds or make buildings disappear, I certainly believe in magic. I mean, the fact that we're all here and breathing on this planet is pretty magical in my mind.
That's right. For this show, it's the seventh run of Death and Harry Houdini. Do you see yourself continuing? I mean, is this something that you said at the beginning, you love getting back together to do it, but as a magician and as, you know, magician with essentially this is your set.
You know, sure.
Do you see yourself evolving out of Death and Harry Houdini?
I hope I don't evolve out of it. I feel like in the 15 years that we've been working on the show has grown and that we're still doing it because it's growing with us and we're growing with it. When we stop growing together, it's probably time to stop doing it. But I imagine there's a lot of growing left to do, right? Kind of like I was saying earlier, where at 37, my understanding of death is very different, yeah. and I relate to this character in a very different way because I've lost people that I wish I hadn't lost, that when I was 23 and playing the part, I hadn't lost yet. And so I understand Harry's fight a little bit better now than I did back then. And I think that in another 10 years, I'll probably understand it even better, or maybe I'll just disagree with his fight at that point. Who knows? But I will have a different relationship to it. And I think that will still continue to make it exciting.
Well, we look forward to seeing you evolve with Harry Houdini. The Death and Harry Houdini is at the House Theater of Chicago. That's at the Chopin Theater on Division Street through the 24th of July. Dennis Watkins is a third-generation Chicago magician. He's playing regular at the Magic Parlor at the Palmer House. Dennis, thanks so much for being my guest tonight at the Big Table.
Thank you.
That was great. Dennis Watkins. You know, there's something just really fun about magic. And, you know, you wonder. I mean, you wonder if magicians, I know it's kind of a corny question, but the idea if magicians actually believe in magic. Because they give that gift, as he said. I mean, that's the whole point. They don't want to give away sort of the illusion. They don't want to give away the trick. So the question is, you know, they want us to believe in it. Do they believe in it?
He does.
And I didn't get to it, which was annoying to me. And this is the thing that, like, sometimes, you know, when I do this job. But Harry Houdini died doing water tricks.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
I knew he died doing a trick, but I wasn't sure if it was the one.
I think it was. I think it was the one where he was upside down.
Ah.
So there's something there. Yeah, that would have been interesting to ask him about, the concept of that. Death and Harry Houdini, obviously. But
next time.
I missed it.
The eighth time. When his eighth, right. When he reprises.
Yeah, I mean, even the people tonight on text are like, I saw that show. That show's great. You know, people talking about the parlor and the show Death and Harry Houdini. So always good and fun to be able to talk about magic, something different, eclectic here on the download. All right, coming up, Abraham Levitan. I'm excited to have Abraham back, and we want to do this at Nerds on Tour as a monthly segment.
Love it.
Right?
Yeah.
It was such a good segment.
We
talked about music, all the stuff about the industry and how different artists and tour and where the money comes from. It was fascinating to me, and the hour went like that. And so we talked afterwards, and I'm like, it'd be great if he could come down and do once a month. So Abraham's going to come in. We'll talk about, there's a couple of issues. There's the petition for for musicians to get at least a chunk or to do something with YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's fascinating. I find myself almost finding songs when I want to find songs through YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And that's sort of like, that's the thing I do at my when I'm at the desktop. And the same, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, the new Chance the Rapper. There are two artists that I love from Chicago, Kanye West, Chance the Rapper. And both have created exclusive deals in which their material and their music, their new music is just in services I don't actually own. And I refuse to give money to.
You want to buy it eventually. You just don't want to do it through Tidal.
Right. But there's no other ways to get it. Now, on chance, he's going to be able to get it, and they said it's a 2-week only.
See,
but the joy, I mean, they're driving me crazy here because the joy of new music, new music Tuesdays, Good Fridays, all that kind of stuff, the joy of that was the idea that I could listen to it right away.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's dropped, the new stuff. And they're taking that joy from me.
Well, we were on the air on Friday, and all of a sudden I noticed that my Twitter started blowing up, that Coloring Book was out. And so then, you know, I went to various sites, and it's like, you know, you can download it through Apple Music here. You know, you click on it, and you're like, oh, I don't want to go through all the trouble. So I, like, waited. And I heard it, you know, Angels is on there. We've heard that. We've heard Blessings and stuff like that. But there's tons of other stuff on there that I was really interested in hearing. The next day, Saturday, went to, as you mentioned, YouTube. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, somebody uploaded the entire thing to there. So I got to stream it through YouTube. And I know that's probably not right now
what I'm looking
rewarding
for.
The artist.
Right. Well, we'll talk about that with Abraham. About that's part of what they're trying to figure out. How do you reward the artist for clicks and plays and all that kind of stuff? Because that's how a lot of consumers are doing it.
But I took the time out to do that as opposed to just doing it. Like you say, you want to just like get it and
I'll pay for it. I understand that Chance gives free music and Kanye, sure. But I'll pay for it.
Yeah.
I'll do the whole album. I'll cherry pick the songs I want, but Chance will get money from me. Same with Kanye West, he'll get money from me. But I'd like to be somewhat respected as a consumer who has been there from the beginning for both of those artists and wants to continue to do it. And the choices that I make may be Luddite. They may be sort of, you know, backwards in the way that the world of music is going.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still choices that I make. If I want to press buy on for 99 cents or download something free from Apple because I have an iPhone and that's just the way that my system works.
Yeah.
It used to be that if the new U2 record came out, it was a CD, a tape, you know, an 8-track, and all at once. And so they're changing the rules of music. And that's what throws me off a little bit about, I mean, it seems to me that they're almost forcing you to make alternative choices, choices that may be illegal in the way that you're just getting the music for free.
Yep.
I was wrong about Harry Houdini, and I thank the texters who jumped down our throat.
What happened?
I'm glad we didn't talk about this because it would have wasted time. The 1953 film Houdini, starring Tony Curtis, had created a myth of how he died. That's not how he died, but that's how the movie made him die. So the movie had him dying in the water trick. But in reality, you know, looking at one of these sites, in reality, he just had a fever and he was resting before a show. Some guy came up to him and asked him if he could withstand any punch to the abdomen and if it had any truth to that, because that's what his bit was. So Houdini, he did it, and he got internal bleeding, and he died.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's terrible. That's terrible. That's no good. So anyway. All right. Abraham's coming up here on the download. Stay with us. Yeah, is The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight with the halfway point of The Download. Abraham Levitan is the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that talks to musicians about the music industry. Tonight we start our monthly segment with Abraham about different issues for both artists and consumers. Abraham Levitan is the Chicago musician. He fronted the band Baby Teeth. He also did Shame That Tune at the Hideout. And his company Piano Power is all about providing in-house lessons from real artists who teach the students what they want to play. No chopsticks.
Well, not unless that's their dream.
That's their dream, right? Good to see you, Ram. Thanks
good
for being back.
Good to see you, Justin.
Yeah, so we want to talk about issues in music, and I think this is a good week to do it. What I've been ranting about all night is streaming, but not necessarily streaming sites like Apple or Spotify. What I'm finding trouble with is artists signing exclusive deals. We've seen this with Chance this week. Chance the Rapper, Coloring Book, is only available on Apple Music for 2 weeks. We saw it with Beyonce on Tidal, with Lemonade. We saw it with Kanye West on Tidal. It just seems like what we're finding or what we're seeing with the new releases from really popular artists are sort of exclusive deals with one company.
Mm-hmm. And they can kind of go in a different way when you take your eye off the ball. For example, Kanye was very public about Life of Pablo will never be on Apple Music, ever. And then when nobody was looking, like less than a week later, it was on Apple Music and on iTunes. So I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors and a lot of big talk when a record first comes out. I mean, you and I were talking before that streaming is so confusing to artists right now.
Right. They're not making money off of it.
Right. And that if you are offered an exclusive deal by one of these big services, you feel like the man.
Right.
And maybe that little moment of bliss and publicity makes you feel like you're on top of it.
And I wonder if there's obviously some sort of monetary deal. You know, Chance the Rapper is getting paid to exclusively run it on Apple Music and probably getting paid up front what he probably would never see from just being on a streaming service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that kind of information, at least in the 30 seconds of time that I put into it, was ungoogleable. I was trying to find out, like, what is Beyonce getting from Tidal? And I guess maybe it's marital security would be the answer to that question.
She doesn't need it.
If you,
at this point,
if you put out an album about infidelity and how horrible your marriage is, at least do it in a way that supports your husband's business.
Right. Always. Right. Well, I mean, I was just ranting to Pete and to the audience about sort of being on the ground floor with artists like Chance or with Kanye, where you just feel like you're part of their crew and their team, and you feel like you're supporting them. You're doing everything you can to let people know about these artists.
And by they get ground to a certain, floor, you mean as a fan?
As a fan, yeah. Not as a producer.
Okay.
I wasn't in the back of the room with Kanye like, you know what? How about Jesus Walks instead of Teddy Walks? Teddy Walks, no one knows Teddy. What if you change it to Jesus?
Ooh.
No, I wasn't there. No, as a fan. So I just, in this case, I'm not sure if an exclusive deal is for the fans or if it's for the artist.
I think it's for Tidal, really. I mean, the Kanye and Beyonce examples seem to be the easiest to explain in that they're super tight with Jay-Z and want to pump up a business that was rumored to be completely falling off the map a few months ago. And I know that Lemonade alone got Tidal like over 1 million new subscribers.
Hmm.
So I think that's a pretty easy one to point to, is that they were doing it to help Jay-Z. But yeah, there is the whole question of like, what hoops are you making your fans jump through to get your new record? And will they ultimately turn to piracy instead?
Right.
I mean, with the Beyonce case, you know, I read some article where it said, oh, Beyonce's number one on all the charts, Pirates Bay, you know, essentially anything where people can turn to get it for free.
Right.
Beyonce's kicking some major butt.
Well, you just wonder, too, because Chance the Rapper is a good example where he's offered his music and his career for free. And we talked about this last time, that really artists are coming to terms with the fact that it's always been offered for free. Record labels were getting that money. And where you really, it's just promotion. What you're really doing is making money on the tour. Chance sort of figured that out. He offered it to free. It's great mad respect in the way that you're like, hey, I get this for free, when it really, truly is always free. But this is different in the way that, you know, I have to sign up for a streaming service if I want to get at Chance's free music.
Yeah, I think it makes Chance look a lot less cool, personally speaking. Chance was so ahead of the curve. Him, with the first Run the Jewels album, when it mm-hmm. came out, it was a free mixtape. And that culture seemed so close to the street and so exciting and so like, this is the black market item and here it is on my phone. And oh my God, you have to know somebody who tells you what website to go to. And now that he put himself in the supermarket, there he is, just like everybody else. And it makes him seem, for the first time, just like a little less fresh, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, he's going to have to deal with that at some point as he puts out more and more music that is consumed.
It's true, but yeah. What about the idea that he would have gone through his whole career putting out free mixtapes and after 20 years had this amazing career where he was fully outside of the system?
Yeah, right.
That would have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he's given that up. He's still very adamant that he's not going to be on a major label, and I hope he sticks to that. But it was a really interesting case study to see how long he could have gone on the way he was going. And my heart breaks a little bit that he kind of went to streaming so soon.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the other issues in digital. YouTube, there's really a push to change the law that artists and the digital, what's it? I forgot the name of it, the digital.
DMCA. Just think of the Village People.
We'll talk about the DMCA when we return here on Nerds on Tour. We'll just call it Nerds on Tour, right?
I love it.
Abraham Levitan, who is the man behind the podcast Nerds on Tour, is with us in our new monthly segment. 312-981-7200. If you have a question, if you want to chime in about streaming, about digital, about music in general, the industry, Abraham is here. Stay with us.
This ain't no intro, it's the entree. Hit that intro with Kanye. I sound like Andre. Trying to turn my baby mama to my fiance.
Is this new
she
Chance?
Music, she from
I haven't heard it.
Like Auntie Yonce. Man, my daughter couldn't have a better mother.
Oh, I wish I had this song. Chance's new record, Coloring Book, or his mixtape is out on Apple Music. Abraham Levitan is here. He is our guest. It's Nerds on Tour, a monthly segment here where we talk about music industry, both how the issues affect both the artist and the consumer. Mm-hmm. Of course, Abraham does his podcast, Nerds on Tour, which you can find at iTunes. Ironically, as we talk about this stuff, he's also a Chicago musician, and he's the man behind Piano Power, which is about providing in-house lessons, music lessons, from real artists who teach the students what they want to play. How do you do that? If I say, yeah, I'd really like to learn every Chance, how do I do? I'd like Chance. You find an artist that will teach that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't mean to make it sound like it's a walk in the park. You do still need to know a little bit about theory. But a great teacher is going to break that down into elements. So you might first learn the rhythm of a Chance beat. Mm-hmm. And then you might learn like the bass line that makes it so distinctive. And I mean, you know, it's basically about thinking like an actual musician, which you can right. only get from working with a teaching artist. 'Cause real musicians, you know, I think the difference is you hear something on the radio and instantly you're segmenting it out. What is that bass doing? What is that guitar doing? What is that producer adding to it? And the more you can train an 8-year-old to think about music
that way,
that 8-year-old's going to take over the world.
And they will, too, give their music to Apple to stream for 3 months at a time.
God willing. I think by that point, musicians will actually be paying people to listen to their music.
312 says, totally agree with you. We joined Apple Music for the trial, and we're going to cancel in 3 months, but I better remember to do that. I think that's the business model for Apple Music, but he says by then I hopefully can buy Chance's album straight up. But that is interesting because it, you know, a lot of people are probably doing that, right? They're signing up for a 3-month trial, and the whole idea is that Apple is going to be able to keep them there, which is tough because a lot of not great reviews for Apple Music.
Oh man, no. Speaking strictly from my perspective, I could talk for the rest of this hour about how much I hate Apple Music.
Really?
I was so ready to be part of that ecosystem. Yes, Apple, it's just like my phone. It's just like my computer. Of course I would want to use their streaming service too. But this thing was so clunky and it would erase my downloads on a regular basis.
Right.
compared to Spotify, the recommendations algorithm is so Bush League. Like, I think I listened to a Willie Nelson album once on Apple Music, and for the next 3 weeks it was saying, hey, have you heard of Willie Nelson? You might want to listen to Willie Nelson's greatest hits. It was like the circular argument school.
Isn't that the point of a streaming service, to have a good algorithm to turn you on to music that you may not have known about, but is similar to the stuff you're listening to? I mean, you really got to have a good hit rate if you're a streaming service in that algorithm.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm not being paid to say this, but the Discover Weekly playlist that I get from Spotify has blown me away with how eerie it is about hitting my sweet spots. I mean, I think that's a service that no other streaming service has matched. And looking at what Apple was serving up to me, I mean, you know, it was almost to the level of like, have you heard of Thriller by Michael Jackson?
Well, you know what? I'll just go get my music from YouTube like I always do, right? Is that still a thing? Can I still do that?
So you're that guy. You're that YouTube listener.
Yeah, right. So this is going to the artists want this to change.
The way that that YouTube is policed. Yeah, that's absolutely right. There is this act called the DMCA, which was written in 1998, which in internet terms is many, many generations 20s,
right,
ago.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
At that time, there was no YouTube. I think about 5% of the population was online in this country. So at this point, essentially what the law says is that if there is copyright protected content on YouTube, it is the copyright holder's job to grab it file a notice to get it taken down.
Which is why you see all the, what, if you've ever been a part of a cease and desist, which I have.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Like when you are putting a comedy sketch up and you might use a Kanye West song, they quickly, a lawyer will contact you and say cease and desist. And you're like, who's got time? You know, I actually, we got a conversation going with one of the lawyers. I'm like, what's your deal? And they're like, we just get freelanced out.
Yeah.
Like, I work for Warner Brothers or whatever, and I get paid just to be able to email you. And stuff.
Well, I mean, Prince, may he rest in peace, was employing his entire family for this purpose. to troll YouTube and look for any instance. I mean, the legendary case with Prince was that there was a mom who posted a 25-second video of her kids dancing to Let's Go Crazy.
And he's like, get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That ain't yours.
No. But oh, essentially, no. I mean, the point is, Prince has time and resources to do something like this. Very few other artists really have the time and resources to be their own police. Meanwhile, YouTube is making billions of dollars, at least partially because of this content. So a bunch of artists from all different genres signed a letter. And you know what happens when you sign a letter.
Right, right.
Things happen. but in any case, they are pushing hard for this law to be rewritten, essentially to say it's YouTube's job to police itself, instead of asking each artist to file cease and desist.
I would assume that YouTube, just on the basis of their business model, which is to essentially provide a platform and let people go hog wild, is not in favor of being the police.
It would be a major buzzkill.
So do you think there's a chance that the law would be changed? I mean, you'd have to go through, I mean, I guess an FCC, or who would even be in charge of that?
Well, I mean, it's the same question I have about anything involving the government. It's like, who stands up to YouTube? Is Win Butler from the Arcade Fire going to go to Congress? I think he could.
Right.
I think he's got the ego for it. But is he going to go to Congress and stand up to YouTube? And
right.
I just don't know if the artists have the lobbying power to make a change. I hope they do, though. I mean, I think internet...
Well, couldn't they be... I mean, there is some semblance of the record industry left. I mean, a Warner Brothers or a Sony Music, couldn't they be the ones that go to YouTube and say, let's fight it out?
Yeah, that's what it would have to be, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, internet time is, it's just everything changes every 5 years. And so the idea that this law is from 1998 makes it seem really, really old.
Yeah. Well, I hope they don't do that, because essentially I am the guy who will go and find the YouTube clip of the new Chance thing where it's like just a slide Like it's a picture of like Chicago, and then it's like a 4 minute track. You're like, that worked for me, man. That worked for me.
You know what's interesting though is that I've been reading a little bit more about the ways that people trick the system. So YouTube, if it's the actual master recording, they can spot it instantly and say, oh, that's a master recording of a Chance song. That has no business being on here. But people can slow it down by 2%.
And it tricks the system.
YouTube cannot track that.
I will die for you. That's what they should have done. Let's go crazy.
Well,
that changes the vibe of that song a little bit.
Makes it sound a little bit more from beyond the grave, actually.
Abraham Levitan is in studio. Nerds on Tour is our segment tonight. We're talking about the music industry, the issues that affect both the artists and consumers. If you have a question, 312-981-7200. Let's talk about Prince and how protective he was of his music when we return. Does it sound good?
Sounds fantastic.
Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, it's Picnic. Each Tuesday night, we pick a new nickname for a 2016 Cub. It's pretty simple, and it has been a successful segment. We've had Cubs fans come in and help us. Tonight, Brad Zabung from The Heckler is going to join us. We've had successful nicknames for Dexter Fowler. He's Free Range. That's his nickname. That's a great one. Last week, it was Kyle Hendricks. Who's the other one, Pete? It was, I don't know why I'm blanking on the other one.
From last week?
Yeah.
Wasn't it Javi Baez?
Yeah, Javi Baez, Babyface.
Yeah.
Javi Baez is Babyface.
Now, see, I think of Addison Russell as Babyface.
Well, we're going to get to Addison Russell. He's coming up. We're going with kind of the bench player, middle reliever types.
Okay.
Up to this point.
Okay.
So we had Kyle Hendricks at the fifth starter, and he is the calculator.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
He's an Ivy Leaguer.
Yeah, right. So tonight, and we give away prizes. So the person who comes up with the nickname gets tickets and pizzas and all sorts of stuff. Tonight, we thought we'd do two players. Hector Rondon. Am I saying that right? Rondon?
Yes. Yeah.
The closer.
Yes.
That's a big one. I was almost tempted to be like, that's a one. We only need him tonight, right?
He's the Kira Sedgwick of the team.
He really is. He's
the closer. He's
the closer, right. That you just ruined the whole hour. And we don't have to do the hour now. It's done. So we'll do Hector, and then we're also going to do Tommy La Stella, a utility infielder, outfielder. He's an IF/OF. Play anywhere. Tommy La Stella, Hector Rondon. Those are the nicknames we need for Picnic coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. 312-981-7200. You can text. You can call. We got prizes. It's going to be so much fun.
Don't get me going, Justin.
So you can stick around. It is so much fun. People text in with their ideas, and they're hilarious. Last week, I forgot. There was a couple. They're all running together, but there were a couple for Kyle Hendricks that I was dying laughing. People were really killing it, so... I expect the same tonight. All right, Abraham Levitan in studio. We're talking Nerds on Tour. That's his podcast. And we're talking about the music industry, how the issues of the day affect both the artists and consumers. Abraham, also a Chicago musician. He was the man behind Shame That Tune at the Hideout. And he also does Piano Power, which is a great service that essentially a business where you bring musicians into someone's house, a student, you teach them what they want to play.
Yeah, these are in-home.
Where do you find the musicians?
Well, what an appropriate question you just asked. You know, it's graduation season, Justin, but to Piano Power, that is hiring season.
Oh, okay.
So I want to put a message out there to anybody that knows a college grad who is about to relocate to Chicago to begin a life as a musician. I want to meet this person. We are
to know the young minds.
Absolutely. I want to mentor them, set up great schedules for them, train them, and college grads that are just moving to Chicago, in a lot of ways, these are the people that I was about 80 years ago, and I am trying to provide the kind of services that I wish I had when I was 22. That explains Piano Power. That also explains Nerds on Tour.
Well, let's talk about your latest episode of Nerds on Tour, Bonnie Prince Billy.
Yes.
This is the episode. Is it out right now or is it coming
out? It's
out. It's out. Okay, tell me about it.
I had a poster of him on my wall in high school. So it was very surreal to be sitting in his green room talking to him, especially because I had heard that he was kind of a legendarily crotchety interview subject. I mean, there is apparently a famous tape of him chewing out a college radio DJ for 15 minutes that was the central piece of publicity for one of his records.
So you were worried going in.
I was worried, yeah. But, you know, he's, of course, an iconoclast who does things absolutely his own way. But he's also super generous and well-spoken. And so we ended up having a great time. He has some attitudes that I think would shock most musicians, especially in the amount of money he turns down from festivals and licensing opportunities.
Okay. So that's, but for someone of his stature, to have played a career, those are the options when it comes to money, right? For a musician who has a large body of work, there's going to be opportunities all the time where people are like, I want to license that one song. Hey, we'd love to have you play this festival.
Well, I mean, yeah, and I think it kind of goes back in a larger way to what your expectations are for life. I mean, he is somebody who, from my experience with him, and I actually interviewed him once in Chicago and then once back in Louisville a couple weeks later, because we're both from Louisville and I was there for Passover, L'Chaim, and we did another interview in Louisville.
Okay.
So I've seen him in multiple settings, and he has seemed to me to be somebody who is totally comfortable with a middle-class lifestyle. Now, because he has no aspirations to be super big time, I think he can afford to be highly principled in the kind of stuff that he turns down.
Right.
He said, what was that movie with Sandra Bullock and George? They were floating in space. Gravity?
Yeah, Gravity, right.
They asked him to be the closing song for the credits.
Really?
Which I'm sure was like many, many thousands of dollars. And he said, get lost. His argument for turning down licensing pretty much across the board is, I made this song as an exclusive engagement with my fans.
Hmm.
I am telling them that this song is for you. Now, if I turn around and resell it to a car or a movie, now I'm telling the car or the movie that it's for them, and I'm betraying my fans.
It's amazing to hear. I mean, obviously, principled rock stars are nothing new. That's part of it, right? We're not going to sell out.
But they're getting rarer.
But that's what I was going to say. I mean, even the ones that, you know, sell out at the highest level, when you talk about Rolling Stones or, you know, any of the Paul McCartney, you know, like they somehow are able to continue to retain that sort of that fame and that respect. You know, like, they're not sellouts, even though they're on every commercial and every...
Yes, because there is very little reputation penalty for doing that these days. I mean, I did an interview a couple months ago with a guy named John Roderick, who is big on the Pacific Northwest scene, where Death Cab for Cutie and The Shins and a lot of those bands came from. And he said there should be a statue of The Shins in the Seattle airport, not for anything that they did musically, but because they licensed their song in 2000 to a McDonald's commercial at a time when nobody was doing that, and they didn't explode.
Right.
And they didn't.
Right.
And everybody noticed that and was like, oh, I guess this is okay now.
So, you know, one of the other things that you talked about in that interview was just the concept of what you do to reach fans. You know, that he seemed to be pretty sort of okay with having the fan base he has and not necessarily having to reach out.
You're talking about Bonnie Prince Billy.
Yeah, Bonnie Prince Billy, right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really two models. I mean, it's do you think PR is helpful to you, or do you not think PR is helpful to you? Now, on the surface of it, PR is always helpful because it's publicity and it gets you new fans and gets you more people to see your shows. But his attitude is, are the people that are with me long term, are they affected in any way by a PR campaign? And he's come down on the side of, those people are really not. Those are the people that are going to support me in a major way over the years.
So I don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
Anything that I do with a new PR company or a push or whatever doesn't affect them anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he said, you know, when I go to a show, I meaning Bonnie Prince Billy, probably incognito. when I go to a show, I can tell who's there just because they read a Pitchfork review. And that's not the kind of show that I want to play. Now, if you take that to its logical extreme, you have Kurt Cobain being driven completely insane by the prospect of playing for people that would have beaten the snot out of him in high school and having to face them every night. So, I mean, that kind of integrity is what Bonnie Prince Billy is all about. And yes, it costs him a lot of money. And I don't think he gets as many cool points for it as he would have 20 years ago.
Right. I mean, our fans even recognize, I mean, you don't recognize him unless that, ironically, unless that becomes a PR.
Sure. Of course.
People aren't going to know that he passed up on a licensing thing or that he's being legit. And I guess it's that these are the stories that are told around the campfires, but those stories are less and less heard.
That's right. And, you know, when I was interviewing Bettina Richards from Thrill Jockey, which is a big indie label in Chicago, she was saying, you know, 20 years ago, everybody knew that we did a 50-50 profit split with our artists. And our fans who bought records bought them in part because they believed in that philosophy. And now she feels like nobody who buys a Future Islands record on Thrill Jockey cares one way or the other, or cares.
They're not invested in that way.
That's right.
Why do you think that is? Is that because of the internet age? Is that because now there's so much and you can press a dollar on anything and buy anything at any time?
I think it has something to do with the idea that you're not forming a long-term bond with one entity in the same way that you used to, whether that entity is a band or a label. You're not following the same dog around the track for 10 or 15 years because with the click of a button, you can go somewhere else in 30 seconds.
Because Spotify, if you like this, you'll like this, right?
Yeah. So I think the whole idea of saying this is my team is not present in the same way that it was. I mean, the 90s were so much about, I have this T-shirt, I have this bumper sticker, I have this mail order catalog.
Right.
It was really important.
And the labels were almost rock stars themselves.
Absolutely.
Sub Pops and the others. And maybe that's changed a little bit in the way that you can a la carte everything.
Yeah.
Abraham Levitan, we're going to do this every month. You know, we used to do this segment on the download last summer. Maybe we can bring it back, which was it was called Which is Better. And we had the best one we did was Dr. Dre versus Jay-Z. Right? Like who, and you can use any argument you want.
Yeah.
So I think we should incorporate that into this segment because I have one that for you. Okay. We can do this one next time.
Okay.
Whitney Houston versus Beyonce. Right?
Well.
On first glance, because it's modern, you're like, Beyonce. But then you're like, Whitney Houston, a lot of albums and a lot of hits, lived in a different time, was probably, when she died, you know, one of the most recognizable artists of our time, our generation.
I mean, certainly did so much more drugs than Beyonce could ever dream of doing.
Right.
And Beyonce responds by starting a line of fitness clothing.
But I mean, just on that concept, on first glance, who do you like? Maybe that's what, who you like. We call it, instead of which is better, who you like. Who you like.
Oh, I mean, maybe up to like 18 months ago, I would have said Whitney Houston, hands down. I think it gets more interesting now only because Beyonce is making a play for having cultural and political relevance.
Yeah.
And that makes it interesting. Like Beyonce is almost positioning herself as like a 60s, 70s artist who is like connected with larger civil rights issues.
Right. She's like the Jane Fonda of her time.
I think what her PR person should probably be saying is that she is the Jane Fonda of R&B.
Abraham Levitan, who you like is now a new segment inside of Nerds on Tour. We're going to have Abraham on every month here on the download. You can check out his podcast, Nerds on Tour, which is on iTunes. Also, Piano Power, looking for musicians. If you know any young musicians who want to be molded by Abraham.
By my soothing voice.
There you go.
I also want to let you know that Piano Power teachers are going to be doing a monthly night at the Hideout starting this coming Monday. Monday at 10 o'clock. So come to the Hideout Monday at 10, and you will see
all
Piano
teachers.
Power teachers rocking, kind of like the Electric Mayhem is what you should probably picture.
It sounds, I'm trying to think of the plural mayhem. Sounds mayhem-y, right? Abraham, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.
Coming up, it's Picnic. Hector Rondon and Tommy La Stella. What are your picks? Wait, picks for Nick's nicknames. We're on a mission here at The Download to give every single member of the 2016 Chicago Cubs and the 2016 Chicago White Sox a nickname, a legitimate, authentic nickname. So far, so good. We've given one to Justin Grimm, Dexter Fowler, Kyle Hendricks, and Javi Baez. Tonight, Hector Rondon, the closer, Tommy La Stella. 312-981-7200. We have tickets to give away. We have pizzas to give away. We'll pick the top two, one for Tommy La Stella and one for Hector Rondon in the 10 o'clock hour. So if you have your ideas, get them in. 312-981-7200. That's coming up. So what's your pick? I didn't hear you, Pete. Do you like who you like? You like Whitney or Beyonce?
Probably Whitney Houston, I think. I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a good one. Who you like?
Who you like? It is tough. I mean, because you can make the argument that Whitney Houston, you know, had I mean, we'll see. I mean, Beyonce's still, I guess, early in her career.
Yeah.
And that'll. But the impact that Whitney Houston had on pop music was so impressive. I get so emotional, baby.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, like even her early stuff. How do I know if he really loves me? And then even like, I'm every woman. It's all in
too
me.
Too good.
I could keep going. I could just keep going. I'm not going to cry. I'm not gonna... The slow jams. But Beyonce's got great songs too, you know, and she also had a band before. She had Destiny's Child.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a good mix because Beyonce is considered, Queen Bee is considered the number one pop music star of our time.
For sure.
So it's a good one. And I guess you got to add in if you're going to, I mean, you could make an argument about public, like sort of public appearance. You know, as Abraham said, you know, Beyonce's got a much more positive public appearance at this point. Whitney Houston at the end was not a
reality show.
She's a reality show. She was in and out of rehab. Yeah. So it wasn't sort of this, you know, social, political, cultural commentary. It was more sort of, you know, watching a pop star kind of, you know, implode.
Yeah.
So you got, I think you got to put that into the mix. So anyway, I think that's where we put who you like. Maybe we could do like the first half about the music issues, like if, you know, streaming, things like that with Abraham. And then on the second half to who you like.
You can do that for an hour. Who you like.
Who you like.
Yeah. So good.
All right, coming up, Brad Zabung's going to join us from the Heckler, and then we are going to play Picnic. You're on the Download. Stay with us.
Hey, 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 Cubs, hey, 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 Cubs, hey, 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 Cubs, hey, hey, hey,
hey, Cubs. It's the Download here on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman, it's Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, so guess what? It is time for Picnic. Again, a great name for the segment. This is a segment in which we here at the Download, Nation, everyone included, we pick nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs. And we're not talking about just sort of fly-by-night stuff. These are authentic, legitimate nicknames. We want these to stick. We want it to be where it's a playoff game in chilly October, and we're like, free range with the catch, and free range, free range. And then Justin Grimm comes in, and we're like, Grim Reaper, it's time for the harvest. Continue. We need help, as we do every week here, someone from Cubs Nation, from the Cubs Fan Jam crew, helps us out. Brad Zabung is a the man behind the heckler. He's been on the show many a time. Brad, good to talk to you. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you.
Did you win your softball game tonight?
We lost.
No, that's a tough start.
Just like the Cubs, and I think we also lost by two runs, just like the Cubs. So there's a lot of similarities, and all of our guys already have great nicknames. So now it's time for us to provide them to the Cubs.
Brad, you at the heckler, it's imperative to have a good nickname, correct? I mean, that's really what it's all about.
And the nickname for this segment is also really good. So you're right. It's high bar right there with the name of the segment.
Well, let's talk. So tonight we've decided to give two Cubs players nicknames for prizes. So we've got some stuff to give away tonight. We've got a pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27th. We've got a pair of tickets, and we also got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25 to give away for the people who can give the best nicknames for these two Chicago Cubs. Are we ready? The first, closer, Hector Rondon. Okay. That's first. Second is going to be infielder, outfielder, Tommy La Stella. Let that permeate.
When you said let's go with La Stella, you signed it with your initials, JK. I didn't think we were doing La Stella. I thought you were joking. You must get that all the time. I don't know why you signed it with your initials.
Sorry, I apologize. Shorthand.
Yeah.
Let's start. You know enough about Tommy La Stella.
Very little. I do, but he already has a great nickname.
What's his nickname?
3 a.m. Joe Madden calls him that because he could get out of bed at 3 a.m. and get on base.
That is a pretty good one. But you know what?
That's pretty good. Right.
You cannot give a nickname. Coach cannot give a nickname. We've decided that. We determined that. It's got to come from the fans.
Yeah, I don't want to slash the tires on half of this segment, but he's already got a pretty good one.
All right, so let's stick to Hector Rondon. Hector Rondon is the closer for the Chicago Cubs. Brad, what can you tell us about this guy?
Well, he's not been used very often so far this year because the Cubs have been so hot and have been destroying their opponents by a run margin of approximately a score differential of approximately, I think, like 8 runs a game right now they've been winning by, although they've slowed down a little bit lately. So hopefully Rondon will get back in action. He's been a solid closer for the last couple of years. But he's not the most colorful guy. He's not like Pedro Strop running out to the mound with his hat cocked sideways and that sort of stuff. So he's a tougher, I think, nickname guy.
Okay, so we got to come up. We really got to dig deep. We can go with Hector, you know, which we've already had some. I've already had some good stuff come through. And I'll get to all the great nicknames coming up right after the break. So we really want to – maybe we could play off the idea of what kind of pitcher is he? I mean, is he a fireball kind of guy? I mean, is he going to get you with the nasty stuff? Tell us a little bit about Hector.
I don't know. I'm not a good X's and O's guy. When he's at his best, he's unhittable. I think he's pretty filthy.
All right.
So, you know, I kind of started brainstorming, and I had some of the contributors with the heckler help kind of do some brainstorming on Rondon. And we played a lot off the whole Rondon don't thing. So, like, don't try to score off him. Don't bring him in because you're winning by 8 runs.
Right.
And also, oh no, Rondon, you didn't. There's a lot of... There's a lot of stuff with that. The whole don't.
I like Ron. Don't you didn't. Don't.
Yeah.
Ron, all right, Mark Tier, what do you got?
All right, you know me. I always like to look into their history, into their past, maybe possibly where they're from. Rondon is from Venezuela. What is Venezuela's key export? What primes that economy down there? As bad as things are down there, what
corruption? Oil?
Well, corruption. That's one thing.
Oil.
Oil. How about Hector? Light, sweet, crude Rondon, because he's so slick.
That's pretty good.
Light, pretty sweet, good. Crude. You always have to have a nickname to go in between the first and last names. So Hector, light, sweet, crude.
Light, sweet, crude. I can see the calls just started lighting up on that one. And Esmeralda, she looks nonplussed.
What does light, sweet oil mean, though?
Light, sweet, crude oil is
what's... Why is it light, sweet?
Because that's what they call it.
Ugh.
They do.
I don't know. Talk to the commodities traders. I have no idea why they call it that.
Oh, it sounds disgusting.
A barrel of light, sweet, crude.
As you know, Esmeralda is the final word on this segment. She has picked some of the great ones. So,
what I like about that is it an alternative to him could be you've got Jorge Soler and Soler Power people call him. So like maybe they don't get along, and you've got oil versus solar power, and there's a rift there.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe not.
Well, I mean, that could work. How about this one? This one is an early favorite for me. This is from Mark from Rockford. 815, Hector the Protector.
That's good. That's really good.
That's pretty good, right? I see people are probably going to go for the rhyme off the front as opposed to rhyme off the back. So it's going to be more of the Hector. There's another one, Hector the Collector. But I do like Hector the Protector.
We had a Hector help me Rondone, but my buddy Brian came up with that. He thought that might be a little too Chris Berman-ish.
Yeah, that is very I like it. I like it. Hector the janitor for when you need to bring him in for a little chin music. Well, that doesn't really.
Well, janitors clean up messes.
Yeah, right. So
he's a closer, so you can bring him in when the bases are loaded, nobody out.
Right.
Clean up hitter.
I like it.
Cleans up the mess.
Brad Zabung's on the line. Esmeralda Rob's around. Pete's here. We'll take a quick break. We also got some people on the line. Stay on the line. We will get to all of the nicknames here on the picnic for Hector Rondon and Tommy La Stella tonight here on The Download. Stay with us. That's right. That could be a good one. Closing time for Hector Rondon. It's Picnic here on The Download. Brad Zabung joins me now. Brad, all right, let's get through this. I mean, I got a lot of good stuff coming in. 312-981-7200. A lot of people going with the rhyme with Hector.
Such as?
Well, okay. Okay. Well, we did Hector the Protector.
That's a really good one. I like that one a lot.
Hector the Spectre. I'm not sure what that. We've got 262 said Hector the Conductor for chin music. That could work. Could be good. 262 also, different 262 says closing time, Hector closing time, and they play closing time when it comes out. That could work.
That would bring me back to college.
Yeah, exactly. On Rondon, we get Rondon. I see 219. Yeah. It's like Hector Rondon.
That would work well, too, because then when his career's about over, people would say he's Rondon.
Yeah. 217 says Hector No Rondon. 773's got Hector Rondon. Same thing. When he comes in, the game is done. 214's got a good one. Hector, Hannibal Hector. All right, we got Cheery. More. I got more. Hey, we got good ones here. Hector the Heckler. He disconnects. Yeah. He disconnects batters by challenging them. That's 708. 773's got a good one. HR. But that may give a negative connotation on that one, right?
I guess. Well, if a batter has to go see HR, they might be getting canned.
Oh, that's good, yeah. But I would think HR is the shorthand for home run, and that's what he can't give up, right?
Oh, yeah. See, I'm thinking corporate speak.
You are.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Hector Curtains Rondon. I don't know if that's going with like a curtain
like
rod.
Curtain call. Curtain call. Like you're done now.
You're done.
Curtain, stage is setting on your at-bat.
Yeah, right. What do you like, Pete?
I like Rob's again.
You do. You're a big fan of light, sweet, crude.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Pretty good.
You think so?
I think it's one to build on. I don't know that luckily we've got like three more hours of this, so so we could build on that.
We've got Hector finish him.
Pretty good.
630 finish him. We also got some Tommy.
Well, you could build off that and do some Mortal Kombat stuff.
Oh, yeah. Finish him.
Yeah, exactly. Rip your heart out.
Yeah, right.
Still beating.
There's a lot. There's a Tommy La Stella coming in, too. Mr. Salty, because you don't want a lot.
How about High Octane? I mean, you know, playing off the oil bit.
High Octane. High Octane. Yeah, that's
Hector
good.
Hector the Save Collector was what one of my friends, Pat, came up with.
Yeah. La Stella's Mr. Salty because you don't want a lot, but he's good in a pinch.
Oh, that's really good.
That is good, right?
That has to be someone else's nickname already. That's too good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
262 says, no, I'll skip that one. 312. it takes a second for you to go, all right. There's a lot of plays on. Give him Hector. 312. Give him Hector. Okay, maybe.
Yeah. Another one of my friends, Jeremy, came up with Hector. Thank God he's not Carlos Marmol Rondon. Pretty good.
Let's go to John on the line. John, what do you like for picnic for Hector Rondon?
I like Hector, which is like Hector the Bull. Hector. I'm not Latino, but I thought that would be good because he's like a bull when he comes in. Hector.
Is that? Oh yeah,
like
Toro.
That.
Yeah, that's really good. Thanks, John. That's kind of like
man.
That's pretty good.
That's really good. They could do Hector-o? A really cool graphic on the video board too. Him kind of like, you know, like a running of the bull sort of thing, or like that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, that could be cool. That's a good one. That's kind of got good sort of end of the game kind of. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Get the graphics up there.
Yeah, I like it.
630 says Tommy La Stella.
For sure.
That's his name. Hector the K Collector is what they like.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It gets tough though with when people are doing K based nicknames. Or like when they'll hang the K's up on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, the outfield wall, and then you get a guy stuck on three strikeouts for a while. It's like it's a bad sign.
Yeah. All right, Hector, the strikeout collector, you got that there. There's a lot of, I mean, right now, I kind of like the janitor, but we did that a little bit last week. We kind of played around with janitor. Help me, Rondon is pretty good.
Yeah.
Hectoro is in the lead right now. And then you got Martyr's light, sweet, crude. which then the announcer would be like, because in Venezuela, there's their biggest... their biggest export is oil. And that's why we call him light sweet crude.
Again, I go back to the fact that baseball has an awful lot of time to explain these things.
That's true.
that's all I'm saying.
Right.
Although when he comes in the game, it's going to be the ninth inning, and you know tensions are usually a little higher than.
Yeah, but then the game
the
even gets
out there.
Yeah, but the game gets even slower at that point, where it's like he winds up,
or call him the oil slick.
Oil slick. Yeah.
Ooh, that's good. Because the batters are always like off balance and look like they're slipping around. I like it.
They look like a seagull that got in an oil spill.
Oh man, that's
depressing. They're slippery. No, maybe not. Maybe that's not. Maybe that doesn't work. Okay, so we got good stuff here. We'll take a quick break for the news. We'll come back. We'll get some more Tommy La Stella in. I know that he's got a good one, 3 a.m. But we got to get past that. We got to have our own authentic, legitimate. Nicknames.
Fan generated.
Yeah, fan generated, because anyone can come up with 3 a.m. That's who knows what that means? You know what? It seems like it's kind of private, to be honest with you.
That could be too. It might be something completely different.
630 says La Stella, the RBI fella.
That's pretty good. Although he doesn't really have, he's more of an on base guy. He's not a big RBI guy. He has terrible walk up music. Have you been
he
to
does?
A game
what's it, what, what is it?
Music? It's that terrible Oh What a Night song.
That's it.
I don't understand it. It's got to be an inside joke or something. It's terrible.
Well, Pete said that that's his name. What's your nickname for La Stella based on that song?
Jersey Boy.
Yeah, that's good. Is he from Jersey? Can we confirm that?
He is. Westwood, New Jersey.
Oh, Jersey Boy.
Westwood, New Jersey.
That's not bad.
Jersey Boy's pretty good.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Brad Zabung's on the line. We'll continue finding nicknames for Hector Rondon and Tommy La Stella. It's Picnic here on the Download. Stay with us.
Oh, what a night. Late December back in 63.
later, Tommy LaStella.
He comes up. It's Picnic here on the download. We're picking nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Got a lot of great stuff tonight. Two players that we are picking nicknames for. Closer Hector Rondon and utility infield outfielder Tommy LaStella. Brad Zabung from the Heckler joins us now. Brad, let's think about LaStella a little bit. You know, I know that you didn't necessarily have too much on him, but what do we know about Tommy?
Well, he's an on-base machine. He, I believe he originated in the Red Sox system and was probably kind of a pet project of Theo and his crew because they really cherish on-base percentage guys. One suggestion that another friend of mine had is since LaStella is star in Italian, you could do some stuff with that, mm-hmm. like Tommy the Star, stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know. These utility guys are tough. But well, he's got a good nickname, and I think Jersey Boy is good too. Like I think we're making some really good progress here. I feel good about this.
I've got for Tommy, I got Tommy Utility and the Four Fielders because of the Frankie Valli.
that's really good.
We also 630 like Streetcar, which I think is a pretty good one, and I've seen that twice now. Streetcar from Stella, and that could maybe hey, look at that, look at the little Streetcar, right?
Mm-hmm.
For 219 says Tommy, what is that? Betelgeuse, LaStella. It's like Italian. 630 says Tommy Interstella.
That's pretty good.
it is hard. It's hard to beat 3 a.m. There's no doubt that is his nickname right now. But we're trying to change it. Some other ones for Hector Rondon. How about the sleeper? Because when he comes in, he puts a nightcap on it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
His walk-up music puts people to sleep too. So,
what is Hector's walk-up music?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were. I can't keep up with these bouncing around.
Well, if you're gonna go with sleeper, you can always go with Sandman.
Sandman. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's good. That was Mariano Rivera's.
Oh yeah.
Song, right.
Yeah.
Well, he retired. Yeah. He's out.
True. So now
you don't retire the song, too.
Well, you retire the nickname. He's gone. You know, now no. it's, I think now it it's gets, Mariano Rivera.
I think it gets buried with him, sort of like. All right.
262 says Tommy Two Tone LaStella. 773 says, how about Tom? Just want to forget the nickname and just shorten it to Tom.
Just Tom.
Hey, Tom's up. All right, let's go, Tom.
Tommy Gunn.
Tommy Gunn is good. I saw that one on was already put out here.
Okay.
There's a lot of good stuff here. I'm falling behind. There's so many texts that are coming in.
I'm just getting confused because we're bouncing from player to player.
Well, I mean, we're getting to that crunch time, Brad. You know,
right?
920 says Hector the Hot Sauce Rondon.
Pretty good. Hectoro, I keep going back to that one.
Yeah. 262 says Hector the Dagger. Mm. 630, here it is for LaStella. Tommy Gunn because he's small, but he can kill you.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Okay, so Tommy Gunn, LaStella. What do you like? What do you like for LaStella, Pete? What do you like? You like Jersey Boy? That's your thing.
I like Tommy Gunn. I think that's good. Yeah, I like Tommy Gunn. I like Streetcar.
What do we need to know about? I'm trying to think of like what's a good. I mean, 630 says Stella the Good Fella.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I just always think about. How is this going to sound when I'm in the stands cheering or pacing in front of my TV?
Right. 630 says Tommy the Hitman LaStella. That seems like a kind of a.
It's like the people that got upset at the Sopranos are gonna.
Yeah, it just seems like
Italian stereotypes.
Yeah, it's not only that, but it's also like kind of isn't the Hitman like a go-to in sports? Seems like the Hitman.
Sure. Yeah.
I do like this one, and maybe there's something here for Hector Rondon. 708 says Hector All Done.
Yeah.
Instead of Rondon, you do All Done. All done? Mm-hmm. Like I could see that being held up. All done.
All done, Rondone.
Yeah.
You can do that.
There might be a consonant problem there.
All right, so Listella's from New Jersey, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Rutgers University is located in?
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
I love this.
All right. This is a long way to go to get there, but bear with me. Rutgers University, before changing their name to the Scarlet Knights, were called the Chanticleers. Okay? Now, Tommy Listella also played baseball for a brief period of time at Coastal Carolina, which were also called the Chanticleers.
Wow.
So let's make the connection here, come all the way back to New Jersey and call him Tommy Scarlet Knight Listella.
Wow, Scarlet Knight. I love it, man.
Like I said, it was
that's
a long road. It was a long road, but there were a lot of connections.
It was kind of a circular road because Scarlet Knights was up very early in that in that explanation.
Yeah. Now, admittedly, you'd have to go into like extra innings to explain that story for Listella.
You got a good story about Tommy's nickname.
By that point, By that point, he's a role player.
He's been replaced.
He came in for the eighth inning to pinch hit. He might help force it to extras.
Yeah, but he's not going to be in the game long enough for you to actually explain that story.
Yeah, stay with us until after the Midsummer Classic, where we continue to explain Tommy Listella's nickname.
If he winds up in his career with the Dodgers and Vin Scully's still around, he'll spin quite a tail around that one. That would work really well. And it could last like a whole homestand.
773 likes Major Tom for Tommy and Stella. Stella Artois.
Yeah.
For seven, just name him after the beer. All right. Maybe they could do a promotion at Wrigley. Like get Stella to be one of the beer sponsors. And whenever he comes up to pinch hit, it's like a 2-for-1. Right?
Well, it's an import, so it'd probably be like it's already like $14.
Yeah, right.
For a glass of that. So
maybe
like,
if Tommy Listella comes in after the eighth inning, they waive the no more beer at Wrigley law, right? So when he comes in, they're like, "Hey, one Stella for everybody who wants one. Everybody wants one." And then they play Stella the Sella song. I don't know what it is, but that could work.
There's something there. I could definitely Stella replacing beers like Budweiser and Old Style as go-tos at Wrigley.
That could work.
That's super easy.
But you would have to Tommy Listella would have to really be the MVP of the squad for that to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
True.
It's not going to pinch hitter's not going to get the beer changed from Bud Light to Stella.
No.
All right, Brad Zabung, on the line with us from the Heckler. We're trying to come up with two legitimate, authentic nicknames, one for Hector Rondon, another for Tommy Listella. It's exciting. Tommy Two Base. Yeah, the Tommy, the kind of gets you going into that kind of Dick Tracy kind of thing. You just continually throw these weird nicknames in the middle. All right, so we will continue the conversation, and we will we'll award a couple winners. How about that? Coming up after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. It's Picnic. We're picking nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, we're taking a shot at Hector Rondon and Tommy Listella. We've got a lot of great stuff. 630 says, Hector no runs Rondon. 414 says, how about Stellar Tommy? 630 says, pinball for Tommy Listella. Like the pinball wizard. Tommy Tomcat, because you can't catch his pitches. And he's a hitter. Right?
Yeah, that guy got grouped up like I did. Or woman.
He really did. The Jersey Devil for Tommy Listella.
That's pretty good.
Is it? I feel like, I guess the New Jersey Devils, right? Listella's a hit, I tell you. All right, let me read some of these prizes we're going to give away. We kind of wrap this up. We're going to give to the winner of the Hector Rondon and the Tommy Listella, we're going to give you one of these two things. One is a pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27th. See the world's best soccer back in Chicago and one of Europe's fiercest rivalries. Get tickets online at International Championship, internationalchampionscup.com. and also a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right. Esmeralda, you there?
I am.
All right, are you ready?
Yes.
You feeling good?
Sure.
Okay. All right, Brad Zabung from The Heckler is on the line as well. Brad, do you want to kind of, here's what the three, I put three finalists for Hector Rondon and Tommy La Stella. For Hector Rondon, we have Hector the Protector Rondon. He protects the lead. He's a safe man. We also have the Sleeper. He goes ahead and puts you to bed. He closes the game out. And then the third is Hectoro, which is a play on his name and a bull, which could be good for graphics if you think, like, at the end when they're like, here comes the closer, you know, and it's
yeah,
almost
that's
like,
my
– and they could –
that's my – that's it's got to be Hectoro.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like that has a lot. They could just borrow some of the graphics from the Bulls, the beginning of the Bulls game, you know, and they're
sure.
Like knock over the Pittsburgh Pirate bus, whatever it is when they're going through. And then on Tommy La Stella, I picked Jersey Boy, which is Pete's, which is great. Streetcar, Tommy Gunn, and let's throw in. We could either do Stella, which is or we could do Pinball. Let's do Pinball. Okay, so those are the four. What do you like, Brad?
Streetcar.
Streetcar.
That's pretty. That I like them when there's like, you know, two or three steps to get to it, but it's tight. You know, I like that. That's good.
All right. Well, that was Brad Zabung from The Heckler, and he has his opinion. But the only opinion that matters is Esmeralda Leon. She chooses each week from the list. So why don't we go to Esmeralda? Esmeralda. For Hector Rondon, the closer for the Chicago Cubs, do we like the Protector, the Sleeper, or Hectoro?
I like the third one. I like Hectoro.
Hectoro, all right.
I am seeing all the images.
Yeah, that could be great.
I think you could get Benny the Bull to show up too,
he runs out.
Do a whole like
T-shirt cannon thing.
Right, bullfighter
type
of situation.
Maybe Clark the Cub could be a matador.
Right, he could hold like the W.
There's a lot of mascot potential here for sure.
A lot of mascot potential, and that is the secret behind Picnic. All right, I like Hectoro. All right, let's go with Tommy La Stella. Do we like Jersey Boy? Do we like Streetcar? Or do we like Tommy Gunn?
I like Jersey Boy. It seems so simple. Mm-hmm. Maybe Tommy Gunn, because then they could hand out Tommy Guns. Not real ones, of course.
They could go to the costume shop beforehand.
Right. And then like, everyone would be like, da 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 da, Tommy Gunn.
I'm pretty sure you're never going to see a gun promo at Wrigley. But
well, you know what? We're talking about 5 years down the line, Brad. I mean, things could change. Tones could change. Guns could be in vogue.
And I'm still thinking graphics.
And you're thinking graphics, and there's a lot. He could come out. He could do that thing where they're like, Tommy La Stella. And then on the video board, he's like in a gangster, like, you know, long coat with his hat.
And
he's got a Tommy gun, and he folds his hands almost like an old poster.
Yeah, I imagine
there's
his name, Bullets.
Yep.
Tommy gun shooting his name, spelling it out.
Bullets,
that's what I'm imagining.
Can we have a write on? I think Bullet's kind of a cool one.
Bullet's good, too. But I like Tommy gun. I'm with Esmeralda on this one. All right, we have a winner, Tommy gun and Hectoro. So Tommy La Stella will be forever known on the download as Tommy Gunn, and Hector Rondon, forever known as Hectoro. Thank you for playing tonight. Two winners. You will be contacted. We'll get your stuff. We'll give you your prizes. Thanks, Desmeralda, once again for choosing some really kick-ass nicknames. And Brad Zabung from The Heckler, thanks for joining us tonight, bud. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Well, that's going to do it for the download tonight. Thanks to everyone who texted in tonight for a Picnic and throughout the program. Thanks to all my guests. Thanks to Pete Zimmerman. Thanks to everybody who listened. We'll be back tomorrow night. Stacey Ballas is going to be here to talk about her new novel. Also, we'll have the actors from the new Haymarket show. And it'll be character flaws tomorrow night. So we got a lot going on tomorrow. Also, we got to talk about Airbnb. We got to talk about the proposed takeover of the airport for contracts, the sort of strong-arm move to take the airport from Rahm Emanuel. There's a lot to talk about. Mike Fouché will be here at 7:30 as well. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez up next here on WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. All right, you know what? We got to get to the news. I mean, are they still – I mean, what? Where are we at? I guess I haven't been paying attention because we're coming up with nicknames for the 2016 Cubs. I feel like, you know, that was more important than who won the primaries in Kentucky and Oregon tonight.